Myth-busting about planned gift fundraising. Hi, I'm Bill Stanjakovich. This is the first day from the Fundraising School, and I'm joined today by Christy Boyson. Christy has an extensive history in providing consulting to nonprofits on planned giving, as she serves as the founding CEO of Apex Legacy Consulting. And Christy, thanks so much for being with us here on the Fundraising School's podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
So the first question before we get into some of these myths that you see so many fundraisers have is, what attracted you to planned giving? As we teach for the Fundraising School, folks actually kind of like to stay away from this topic. Oh, got a meeting, got to check my email, need to do my socks, you know, all these examples why they can't sit through a module on planned giving. But this is a topic that has fascinated you. What led you into this field?
Such a great question. And actually, the last couple of weeks, it's been surfacing a lot in different discussions. I actually fell in love with planned giving because of the Charitable Remainder Trust, which makes no sense. I realize most people think that's, you know, a complicated vehicle and all of this, but it's such an incredible tool for those that have large estates, small estates, because it allows the donor to receive income. It allows the family to receive income, depending on how it's set up, and for charity to receive a huge gift. And we minimize tax. It's this like 3-for-1 sort of opportunity. So that is why planned giving really stood out to me.
So Christy, you truly are called to this work, because other fundraisers, when they hear Charitable Remainder Trust, that's when they start to bow out of the conversation, because they feel and understand that planned giving is so complex and can be complex when compared to annual fund and major gift and campaign fundraising. As you're doing this work, what are some of the myths? Maybe take one at a time that really stand out as you're working with nonprofits across the United States.
Yeah. So the first one that comes to mind, and you already touched on it, is it feels complex. It feels too complex. There's too many nuances. We have to deal with lawyers and financial advisors and tax experts. And it just feels like more than we can handle. And I think the reality is, while yes, it is complex, there are complexities to it. There are nuanced details that we need to make sure are right before we execute a plan or, you know, put something into action. We don't have to do it alone. And I think that's the beauty of this particular space, is when we bring a team together with a donor who has interest or curiosity or wants to do something impactful, when we bring that team together, we can make that happen. We don't have to know all of that in this space because there are so many others that can come alongside. But that absolutely, I think, is the number one reason why fundraisers stay away from this topic. When it potentially surfaces in a conversation, they don't necessarily know what to do or what questions to ask or how to engage a donor. And so we just kind of stay away from it, which I think is doing a disservice to the organization, but ultimately it's actually doing a disservice to that donor, because they don't know what's possible. And when that, you know, when we are willing to engage in it, we learn or know what we need to know and when to bring others in, it can really make a huge difference for your donors, not just for your organization.
So, Christy, we have a team. We have people we can turn to who have the deep levels of expertise, and those experts might charge us a fee. But at the end of the day, we are still receiving a planned gift minus the fee, but still more than what we started with. Second of all, what advice do you have then for fundraisers? That's sort of on the back end. The donor has agreed to this complex planned gift or bringing in this team of people. What about at the start of the relationship, if they have this hesitancy about planned giving, and what they should be listening for or how they should be talking to donors, the types of questions they can be asking to dive into the topic into the first place?
Excellent question. All right. So there are a couple of different things that I if I were new to this space or feeling a little unsure how to engage, the first thing is I would, even if there are a million other priorities, I would definitely begin digging into these different vehicles. What is out there? What's possible? So trainings would be a big one. But when it comes to actually getting to know a donor, In my work, values is where I start. Usually top priorities for a family or a donor would be, you know, caring well for their family, making sure they're set up appropriately. That might still mean there's some nuance or some, you know, unique structures in the plan to slowly distribute an inheritance. But understanding values with the family, but also understanding values within their own community, nonprofit space, all of that. Asking open-ended questions. I think the more that we in this fundraising space can ask questions to get to know the donor, to get to know their values, their heart, what gets them fired up in the morning. And inside that, then digging, right? We can ask one question and then taking note of, okay, they lit up when they talked about that thing, right? It's the nonverbal side of things, or they mentioned this asset that they don't know what to do with, or an inheritance that's coming their way, or they have some concerns about their kids inheriting something because of, you know, spouses, addiction issues, whatever's going on there. All of those things are telling a story about who the donor is, what's going on. And then in the back of your head, if you've done some training on different vehicles that are out there, you know, if someone has a child with some addiction issues or special needs or other, whatever complex things are happening, a charitable remainder trust might be a really good situation that would benefit and support their kid, can also give something huge to the organization. So it's really, it's a paying attention and listening fully while having some knowledge in the back of your mind as to what's possible.
Which is called fundraising. As Christy mentioned, you're harming your nonprofit if you're not including planned giving in your overall fundraising planning. You're also not fully serving the donor and helping the donor become aware of all of their opportunities to make a gift now and to make a gift that could last into perpetuity, perhaps. And so it's not about the fundraiser. It's always about the donor. And as Christy just said, you're asking those open-ended questions. You're listening. You're identifying their values, just as we would when we're doing our fundraising in other areas, such with major gifts and campaigns. So, Christy, thank you for that teaching and that advice. Myth number one is this is too complex, so I'm not going to do this. You've disabused us of that notion. What's another myth that you come across as you do your work?
So this is maybe more of a challenge in this space, but there's a myth hidden in it. So often what I will hear, if there is this really solid fundraiser that I'm in a conversation with and they're like, hey, I know that there's value here. It's how do I convince my board that this actually matters? How do I get funding for, you know, whether it's training or it's actually bringing someone in part-time or a consulting group, whatever it is, it's prioritization of this at the organization, because most nonprofits are focusing a lot on their annual fundraising and maybe some specific major gifts, right? So tyranny of the urgent, what needs to happen so that we are still here next year or we can raise funds for this big project? And so how does planned giving fit in that, right? Because we don't know when people are going to pass away. We don't know when the funds are actually going to reach our doors, our bank, et cetera. So that's kind of the next myth/challenge. Do you want me to respond?
Yeah, so that's a great point, right? Because the board, when they are properly engaged, is providing that fiscal oversight and is very interested about how are we doing this year with our annual fund? Are we going to be able to pay all our bills? Are we financially healthy? We might even be able to build a little bit of an operating reserve if we're fortunate to have a surplus. And now you're telling me there's this gift I might not receive until 20 years from now. So what advice do you have for fundraisers as they're having that conversation with their boards, and what capacity pieces need to be in place so that we can do our fundraising and our annual fund and our major gift campaigns while also talking to some donors about the potential for planned gifts?
Yeah. So, you know, every organization is at a different stage when it comes to this, right? If an organization, and I do a ton of work with small to mid-size, so if they're really struggling to make ends meet, this may not be the number one priority, bringing in a staff or a consultant. However, the gifts that come in from a planned gift tend to be 10 to 100 times what that donor is giving now. So the potential is significant. And above and beyond that, some recent research has come out. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Russell James. He is an expert in planned giving. His most recent research, I think it was 2020, 2022, somewhere in there, continues to reiterate that the giving that a donor makes annually to your organization increases by about 77% after they've committed a planned gift. The thing we also see all the time is that when a donor chooses to remember your organization, they are essentially inviting you to be a part of their family, which means their commitment to your organization and to your strategy and to your vision and all of that is going to change. They become a much more committed donor, committed supporter, and really a strategic partner in kind of where you're trying to go. So when we think about planned giving, yes, we have to put funds toward that before we see the fruits. But when we think of the even current value add to the donor relationship, to their giving capacity, potential, volunteerism, advocacy, all of those things that we want to see in our key donors, all of that builds as well. So instead of taking away from annual gifts or major gift potential, we're actually adding to it. But it takes a little bit to get there, right? There's training requirements. There's getting some internal infrastructures in place. It's making sure your gift acceptance policy is up to speed. There are layers and things that can be a part of and probably should be a part of launching or revamping or reinvigorating your planned giving program, but it is worth every hour spent and dollar spent.
So when a colleague or a board member asks that very well-intended question, what about our annual fund? Still have to pay this year's bills. As Christy just noted, this is not either or, this is both and. The heart of that question is kind of that scarcity mentality, where, as Christy has just explained, understanding planned giving as part of the overall comprehensive fundraising plan is part of that growth mentality, that abundance mentality that we bring into fundraising. And Christy mentioned Russell James. Just a pleasant reminder to our audience, Russell James authored the chapter on planned giving in Achieving Excellence in Fundraising, the fifth edition. And you can go into the archives of our podcast to hear a description from Russell James to take an amplified and more detailed approach of the good point that Christy just raised for us there. Christy, another myth as you travel the country, disabusing people of their worries about planned giving. What have you seen?
Yeah. So this, again, probably a little less on the myth front, a little bit more on the challenge front. I think that most planned giving programs that are out there that I'm seeing, whether firsthand in our work or just observing and reading and learning, is most are reactionary. Most programs are not proactive. They are not providing opportunities to their donors in a way that's specific to them. Because planned giving really, and I touched on this earlier, it is such a gift to a donor for them to understand what's possible. We are missing out on tremendous opportunity to impact for the better our donors through this work. So I think most programs are reactionary. We're passively noting it. We have some information on our website, maybe, but we are not proactively actually educating and teaching about opportunities in a really easy to understand way so that donors can see how it fits within their own plan. I think that's a huge challenge and a huge gap in this space.
Hey, Christy, as you geek out on the Charitable Remainder Trust, we need to remind our audience that the vast majority, I've seen a statistic, more than 90% of planned gifts are wills, retirement plans, insurance policies, where the nonprofit simply is listed as a beneficiary in one of those, what's become for many middle and upper income households an everyday document, an everyday financial tool. And just to be talking with your donors about those opportunities for planned giving, let alone the more complex gifts that Christy has helped us understand today. And Christy, I would just summarize as I ask you for a final comment. What we emphasize at the Fundraising School is that at the end of the day, we are always in the relationship business. That if things become more technical and more complex, as you mentioned in the response, as you described the first myth that you see, there are other experts that we can bring to the table. And so that's why we encourage fundraisers to make planned giving part of your overall fundraising, and that your normal planned gift donor is a longtime annual fund donor, somebody you very likely have known for a long time and has known your nonprofit for a long time. And Christy, you're helping us kind of sweep away some of these myths and get our arms around some of these challenges. What final word of advice would you have for fundraisers on this topic?
Great question. I have many. What I will leave you with is this. Planned giving is not just for those that are really, really wealthy. Planned giving is really for someone who has a heart for giving. Statistically, Americans give about 60%+ of Americans give every year. Less than 6% are giving out of their estate. There is a huge gap here. And so it's planned giving. As long as someone has some sort of asset and they have a heart for generosity, there is a way for them to be strategic in their giving. And so as you're thinking about your donors, Bill, you just mentioned regular givers, consistent volunteers, they may not be giving a huge amount. They may not be your biggest donors, but if they have a heart and a passion for your organization, regardless of size of estate, they have huge potential for leaving a planned gift. And I promise you that planned gift will still be sizable and probably bigger than you or they fully realized. So tremendous opportunity here. And clearly I'm passionate about this. So thanks for listening.
And the field is benefiting from your passion and from your expertise on this important topic. And I'm so glad you raised that point, because you know what makes the news are these large planned gifts, 6- and 7-figure planned gifts. And a nonprofit says, well, that's not my donor database. And when I teach, I always joke with the class, would you accept a planned gift for $1,000 or $2,500? If not, here's my email address, right? It's not the amount. It's continuing to connect with that donor in meaningful ways. And planned giving is a core course at the Fundraising School leading to our certificate in fundraising management. We teach this course in person and online, as we do for all 22 of our public courses that lead to 4 different certificates. Now, we can bring the planned giving course directly to your board, to your nonprofit, to your association or region. We can do that with any of our courses. We can also take parts of our courses and knit them together in a tailor-made course just for you. Again, we teach in person in the United States and around the world, also online. We have our quarterly webinars. We have these weekly podcasts. And Christy mentioned Russell James. I mentioned his chapter in our textbook, Achieving Excellence in Fundraising, now in the 5th edition. Our website, where all this information is contained, is philanthropy.iueui.edu/the Fundraising School. So grateful to Christy Boyson, the founder and CEO of Apex Legacy Consulting, for sharing her expertise and passion on planned giving on this podcast produced by Dustin Donovan and Mike Anthony. I'm Bill Stanjakovich, and now you are now more fully informed on this first day from the Fundraising School.